Hello, all, and welcome to another edition of Goddess Talks. I'm very, very excited to share with you guys this episode with Karina Kylo and talking about her new book, The Woman Who Married the Bear. I'm fascinated with bears lately, and I thought that I would share a little bit with you for those of you who are listening or watching. Number one, we recorded this last July, which was 2023, and her book, her and Barbara Mann's book was supposed to come out around August, as she says in the video, but it didn't come out till late fall, early winter. And so I was holding on to this video and I was holding on to this recording, hoping to promote her book when it came out, and then, you know, life happened and all that. Number two, for those of you who are watching, you may see some glitches. She is in Norway. She lives outside of a main city. I don't remember why her Wi-Fi may have been glitching a bit. And I was in my parents' trailer recording. It was, you know, life has been, this past year has been a lot of changes for me, as some of you who follow this podcast know quite well. And that was one of the first of the changes. So it was a real adventure recording this for you guys. That being said, the interview and Karina's knowledge about bears and bear cultures, especially in Nordic Europe, and Barbara Mann, of course, does her half in Indigenous North America. It's such a fascinating collection of work. And I think it's really just scratching the surface of bear mythology, but especially the connection between women and bears. And because of that, I am going to host at the end of March, if you are signed up for the newsletter through the Artemis Center, I'm going to host a free workshop on women and bears, especially now that bears are a symbol of rebirth and the equinox is coming up in March. I'm very, very excited to have a live workshop where you guys can join me and my collaborator, Cornelia, who we do lots of workshops through the Artemis Center together. So I'm going to send that out next week. So if you haven't signed up for the Artemis Center newsletter, please do so, and you can find out how to access, you know, that link for that live seminar. We're going to have lots of fun, and we're going to talk live about women and bears and the meanings of this connection, this interconnection. And I'm very, very excited to share that with you. But today's interview, I hope that you really enjoy, and I hope that one of the things you take away from it is how much we don't actually know about this bear mythology. It hasn't really been popular again for a long time. Perhaps it's making a comeback. And Karina Kylo is an expert in the field and a wonderful, wonderful scholar. And if you can, please buy her book. The links are all below you. Her and Barbara Mann have done a really great job introducing us to this mythology. So I hope you have a fantastic time. Thank you for following. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for supporting me. I'm very excited to leave in April for Crete. And I will, and I am working on the Goddesses of Crete podcast episodes. There's so much wonderful material. I don't know where to start and how to put it together, so I'm working on it. I'm very excited to share that with you. I may do it in three parts. As I said, it seems to be more of a trilogy. I might do the three goddesses separately, but I'm working on it. Lots of good things to come. And I hope you have a fantastic weekend and that you enjoy this interview as much as we enjoyed recording it. Have a fantastic, fantastic day. Thank you for joining me today, Karina. So happy to have you here on the Goddess Talks, Goddess Project. I had asked you before about your name. So Karina Kylo is the right pronunciation, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. It's a really lovely name. In fact, I thought it was Hawaiian for a minute because of the Kylo part.
And oh, okay.
And so today I thought we would talk about, well, we'll talk about bears. And I thought that maybe you could... we could begin by you sharing your story about how you came to work with bears and with bear lore, and maybe why bears?
Oh, so we start with that.
Yes. Let's start at the beginning. So, you know, like what, or maybe, yeah, how did you get into this work, into your research?
Well, I think it all started with my grandfather, because he had killed a bear to save somebody's life.
Oh,
and
my God.
whenever I went to my grandparents' house, the first thing that you saw when you opened the door was the bear hanging in the vestibule. And I was very intrigued by that. But I was always, in a strange way, attracted to bears. But then when I became a scholar, I started studying Jungian psychology. And you know, Jung talks about the bear being an image of the self.
Yes.
And Donald Winnicott talks about the transitional object and the bear being a kind of safety symbol for children. So that intrigued me even more. But then when I was working with the Sami people, you know, they are the indigenous people of Northern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I was taken by a friend, Elina Helander, who was then the head of the Nordic Sami Institute, to a holy mountain, and we pitched a tent and spent a night on the mountain discussing spiritual things. And I had one of those big dreams where the weather station that was next to us was totally shut off. The windows, the doors were closed.
Okay.
And in my dream, they all became open. And I was inside mystically. And I was in a kitchen full of aromas and spices and casseroles just waiting to be used. And when I looked out of the window, there were brown bears circling the house and inviting me to dance. So it was a very powerful dream. And the bears were extremely friendly. And it felt like they were contacting me. And, you know, I can't explain it, but it just felt like the spirit world was really active somehow.
Wow.
And so that gave me even more of a determination to go into bear mythology. And in Finland, the bear, just like in Russia, the bear is a very important power animal and symbol. Mm. And we have a lot of information about the bear ceremonial. So I started really studying that and writing about it. But then I found out that the first element of that whole research area is the woman who married the bear. But patriarchy has downplayed it and doesn't even list it in the determining features of the bear ceremonial. It's like, you know, just a side story. And I started really observing, looking for more evidence. And that's how I found out that the bear husband is a very widely circulated motif around the world, but particularly in the north. And so I was also supervising a thesis by a woman called Helga Reisch in Humboldt University, who wrote her dissertation on this topic. Mm. And so through her, I got even more deeply into it. And then, but prior to that, I had published a book with Inanna Press called Women and Bears, The Gifts of Nature, Culture, Gender Revisited. And what I did with this book, this anthology, was collect all kinds of different genres on the bear. So I had poems, I had emails, I had fiction, I had articles, all kinds of different things, because I wanted to highlight the theme of the bear from different points of view. And predictably, the, you know, librarians were just, you know, they don't know where to put it. You know, what is this? You know, is it ethnography? Is it women's studies? Is it, what is it? But I didn't care, because the bear story is a boundary crossing genre. And the content has to do with breaking taboos of all kinds. So I thought that I had to break all the taboos in the academic world as well. And, you know, and I turned it, it turns out that this anthology is a rich source of primary materials as well.
Wow.
Because of, you know, the Sami stories, the Indian stories, the native stories, and the pictures, and even an email from one woman who went to live with the bears in Kamchatka.
Wow.
So she was, she actually lived with grizzly bears.
Oh my
and
God.
So that was like a real life story as well, to show that we're not dealing with just an academic topic, but this is something that women feel very strongly about.
Wow.
But, you know, I could go on forever, so maybe
no,
I
love
should
it. I love it. I love it. And I also think that some of the people watching or listening, I think I agree with you that they don't, in our popular culture, there isn't very much of this woman and bear connection. I know there's a bit of the mother bear connection and some of the fairy tales, but I'm fascinated by this topic because you're absolutely right. I don't think that there's enough, like there's a lot of information, but it's not something that's very shared. And it's not something that, and here, for example, in North America, we have lots of bears too. In Canada, we got lots of bears. And yet, other than the indigenous, there's really no talking about bears other than, you know, them attacking people or something like that. And so I think it's fascinating. The more you say things, the more I'm like, oh yeah. And like, so there's these connections that you never really think about. And that's why I think your work is so important.
You know, Marianne Engel's book, The Bear.
Yeah, no,
Marianne
I don't.
Engel.
No.
You should get it. You know, she wrote a book about this academic woman who meets a bear. And I, you know, I don't talk about it more now because I don't remember the plot or anything, but I just remember it was a big thing when that book came out. And I am now really quite convinced that we are dealing with something very powerful, particularly for women, because there's so many stories of women running away with, not with wolves, but with bears.
Wow.
And in the Armenian context, I learned from Sima Abrahamian, who also wrote into the anthology, that Armenian women were fantasizing leaving patriarchy through these stories, and they were forbidden. So the leading church officials and men in Armenian society,
right,
did not accept women reading about the stories of women and bears. So obviously that shows that there is something going on other than just female fantasies. It's not only about, you know, erotic encounters. It's not a symbol. It's also a whole human history of the sky world, the great bear under which northern peoples live, being a cosmic principle of some kind. And then there's a connection between the sky world and the earth. So as above, on the earth. So there is, it's hard for me to explain this, but many things that happen in the sky world also have their counterpart on the earth in terms of bear mounds or different bear formations. And then it ties in with the mother bear and the whole hibernation complex where Kailea, you know, the Celtic Irish hag of the winter,
yes,
kind of supervises the winter period and goes inside into the inner world. And then with the bear, what happens is a transformation from death back to life in a cyclical way, so that in the spring, so many different cultures have these celebrations of the return of the light and return of nature, regeneration. And the bear is considered a cosmic, spiritual, godlike figure, because the ancients found it to be a real mystery that the bear could bring cubs out of winter, out of hibernation, after a period of not having any food, being dead under the ground. So it was a mystical happening. And then women were part of the same paradigm, because women, through the menstruation, the cyclical nature of the menstruation, also produce life in a cyclical way. And women were part of the biocosmic measuring of time in the old days.
Wow. And you know, it's funny that you say that about Kaliak, because just recently I've been paying more attention to her, and the language around her is also that in the winter there's a hibernation for humans, you know, and there's this idea of like entering the dark and meditating and reflecting. And so now that you say that alongside with bear lore, it does very much seem to overlap the idea of like going in, of like hibernating, maybe shutting down a bit, maybe relaxing, whatever, reflecting, and then coming out in the spring. So yeah, I can definitely see those ties, those connections.
And my next book will be about, it's called, the working title is Back to Bear Being.
Oh.
Bear as naked and bear as bear. And it has to do with the fact that when I'm tracing the roots of spirituality and the kind of religion that is not institutionalized, authority-oriented domination, but a kind of nature religion, the bear religion is, in my opinion, the first really important, very widely spread spiritual system or worldview.
Yeah.
And you know, when you think of how it all starts, you know, the rituals around campfire or the cave where people would sit around the fire, and there would be sacred springs nearby, all of these things, which I also learned from McCain's, you know, the Romanian scholar I mentioned.
Yes.
Macmillan Keynes, I think her name is.
Yeah.
I think that the sauna has spiritual and kind of structural roots in the bear religion, because even the native people today talk about the sweat lodge as being the bear's den.
I was
and
thinking
you crawl
that.
Inside.
Yes.
And it's a womb. It's a combined womb and bear's den. And did my picture just go off?
It did. It did. It did.
Should I do something about it?
You still have the video on? Oh, there we go.
Went off by itself. Well, anyway.
Weird.
Yeah.
We can cut that out.
Powerful stuff. And then one interesting thing about the bear and the woman is that in Finnish mythology and Finnish writings about the agricultural period, they say that women and bears were believed to have a very powerful vaki energy charge. Vaki is like, energy charge. So that when women wanted to protect their children or the hunting equipment of their husbands or their cattle, they would stand with their legs apart over these beings, and they would sit, you know, above the barn, so that the cows would go from underneath her legs and she wouldn't have any panties on. And the idea of her sex is that it had a protective influence. And in her sex, there is so much power that it's protective energy. And I found later, you know, that among Jewish people, they don't accept that a woman jumps over you or walks past over you, because now all of these things that were spiritually powerful and very appreciated are turned by patriarchy into the opposite. So now it's something polluting, and you know, the most common swear word is cunt, you know, like the same thing that was so powerful and meaningful is derogatory.
Exactly.
But in my research on the sauna type of bear caves, I found that in Iberia, in Iron Age, they had saunas where you entered into the sauna from underneath the legs of a woman. And so it was like an initiation site where you you crawled in through this narrow opening into the womb and you were reborn. So all of those things come together.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm very excited about what I found also in Ireland, where the Irish sweat houses were often close to sacred springs. And they were connected with Saint Bridget, being right. A bear goddess of old. And so it seems that around the world, you know, this bear-based worldview has to do with rebirth, healing, initiation, a lot of very positive things.
Yes, yes. And you know, it's funny, I love the way you're making these connections, because even for myself, so I do a lot of work on Artemis, and Artemis is often associated with a bear. And at Brahran, they have like a bear initiation ritual where, so we are told by the male scholars that the young girls go to Brahran, and they're, as when they're young, they're seen as bears and they call themselves bears. And then they go through this initiation, supposedly at Brahran, where they shed their wildness, they shed their bareness, and they're ready to be married. And so this is what we have documented. And my impression is that this is a patriarchal twist on a perhaps more ancient, right?
Yeah, it is. I agree totally with you. It's a patriarchal reinterpretation or version of the sacred ritual between a woman, when you know, bear goddess or great mother Artemis and her many variants, and the young girl who is initiated into her wild nature, into her real self. And remember, they talk about her being a virgin in the meaning of true to herself, true to her own calling and her own path.
Yes.
And not to being socialized into being the good wife or, you know, the obedient subject of patriarchy.
That's right, domesticated in some way.
And I found that we have a similar kind of ritual, a procession of young girls in Finland, which is still celebrated, where they walk into a holy mountain, and it's an all-woman kind of a ritual for matchmaking. But they jump over fire, and they call out into nature something called Hela Huto, which means like a something like that.
Right.
And what they're doing is they're waking up nature. They're trying to raise the powers of nature's fertility. And the boys, you know, are side issues, but there's evidence that maybe sexual happenings surrounded this or came out of it, or, you know, then it was turned into a matchmaking thing for patriarchy. But it was much more spiritual and much more erotic in the beginning. And I think that the bear story appeals to women in particular, but I think also to many men, because it expresses the natural law, giving back to nature what you get from it, and keeping the balance between humans and non-human animals. It's a cosmic marriage, sort of, but with lots of different interpretative possibilities, including healing and the erotic. But there is no sharp division between the erotic and the spiritual, as if they were not connected. You know, when you are spiritually grounded, the erotic is an expression of something beautiful, connecting it's not the kind of male sexuality of capitalism where violence creeps in very quickly. So I think that the women fantasize about the bear marriage because it's rooted in a different context of sexuality. And it can be very healing for many women who have been sexually abused or abused by patriarchy because it represents a different social imaginary.
Yeah, I love that. And I think also, I wonder, I mean, I don't know, but I wonder if the fact that also it's fascinating to me that the bear is this massive creature. So there's a lot of weight, a lot of heft, a lot of physicality to it. And yet it's seen, let's say, in the bear and wife or husband as a very soft, very loving, very protective. So it's a different, what I'm saying, it's a different sort of take on masculinity or natural masculinity. Well,
It's the kind of masculinity that's nurturing and caring because in the stories, the bear sacrifices itself for human provisioning needs and sacrifices himself for the woman. And the woman nurtures the bear and gives it milk or something during the hibernation. So it's like both of them taking care of each other. And there's originally not that power relationship that you find in patriarchy.
Yes.
But I would like to also show a picture of the new book that's coming out.
Yes, yes.
If please. I can call it up on the share screen.
Yes, please. Might just take a minute to load, but yeah, that's... Okay, there it goes. Yeah.
Okay, wait. But how do I get to go?
I think it's probably taking a minute to load, maybe. I don't.
That's right.
Right? It probably takes a little because the Wi-Fi might be a little bit choppy, but yeah, there we go.
Okay, I want to go to the beginning.
Mm-hmm. I'm so excited about this book. So excited.
It's coming, it's supposed to come out in August.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
From Oxford University. And I wrote it with Barbara Alice Mann, who is an Iroquoian scholar. And so we combined the North American indigenous perspectives with my study of old Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And a kind of, you know, Gimbutas type research.
Yes. Yes. In fact, Gimbutas was one of the first places I found, you know, or saw, like in her books, the artifacts of bears and the connection between women and bears. So.
Well, the bear effigies that she found, to me, are proof that the first religion, or at any rate, a very ancient religion, consists in combining the bear and the great mother and the regeneration and rebirth are the key issues in this worldview. I'm sorry this takes...
That's okay. No problem at all. No, that's okay.
I don't know why it's so slow.
Yeah, there's so much, I think, once you, and this is why I think your book is going to be so important, because it's really going to serve as a reference manual for so much of these bear stories. And it's very interesting that as you talk about bears, like those, it's sort of like little light bulbs go off in people's consciousness when they'll be like, oh yeah, you know? And so I really think it's a very important time to bring out this kind of connection, especially for women, but also, you know, for men.
Here is the cover of the first anthology I did on women and bears.
Beautiful.
And this is the cover of the book that's coming out of Oxford, The Woman Who Married the Bear, The Spirituality of the Ancient Foremothers.
I love it. Yes.
And, you know, it's been like over 20 years of research into the bear. It wasn't an easy topic because I didn't find that many others who would have been approaching it from an ecofeminist or archaeomythological point of view. But now there's more coming out, and I have been given very interesting information from even Korea, where they have a very similar story about initiations in the cave and women being the leaders of the ancient worldview. And I'm putting all of that into the book about the sauna, because the sauna as a healing space is like the first church.
Yeah.
It's a spiritual site and not just a place for hygiene and washing, which it has become in Finland and in many other places. And I think it's very important to also reintroduce the sauna, because apart from the bear religion, it is a powerful place for healing, because there it's not the eye that dominates, you know, the gaze, the other senses, the feeling, the sensations of your body, all of these other senses are activated, so you find it easier to enter a meditative space, a liminal space, and you, in that state, you are more open to getting messages, or if you believe in spirits, being contacted by spirits or by ancestors. And then also, when you compare it with a church or a psychotherapist office, where, you know, it's all in the head and you're sitting there. Well, no, it's not all in the head, but, you know, it's not like your body is not activated. You're not feeling the Holy Spirit as a sort of humid thing on your body, and you're not smelling all the aromas that you have in the sauna. So it doesn't open your senses in the same way. And, you know, it's more in the head, because you're talking about the past. True. Or you're talking about the God, but in a dissociated way. Your body is not part of it, because it's all transcendental, or it's all academic. And,
yeah.
And you know, your body doesn't participate in the discussion of sexual traumas or any topic that you would like to address. Whereas in the sauna, it's a different thing. And I have, for instance, given some healing saunas where women were sitting around the stove in a circle, and each one at their turn would throw their problems on the rocks and get support from the other women. And the idea was that anything you say there stays there. It's you can, you know, bear your being totally in a trusting environment,
right,
and get support. And the fact that it's dark, it makes it easier,
yes,
to really hear your inner self. And all of this ties in with the bear's cave and the symbolism of going inside, like into a hibernating space, meditative space.
Yeah.
And also the image of the woman is, the image of the woman is different in this imaginary, because like in this cover, you know, it's not an isolated individualistic human, but you're connected. And in the images of the bear women in Permian bronze casts, the woman is a tree of life and combines genders and generations and species. So it's an ecological identity, which is very different from the capitalistic and consumer-oriented human identity.
Wow.
There's so much to say about it. And
yeah,
you know, Genevieve Vaughan has taught me a lot about the gift economy, and I realized that as an economic system, that would be better suited to make sense of how people lived in the past in old Europe and elsewhere, because the idea of the gift is that you give back to nature what you get from it, not in an exchange, because you can't always give to the same being what you get from them, but it's a circular economy of everyone being looked after. So you cater to needs rather than creating artificial needs.
Right.
And
right.
This cosmic sense of connection brings about a very different sense of belongingness and being than the individualistic exchange-oriented worldview where we live today. So I think we need all this information also to heal from patriarchy.
I think so. I mean, yeah, I can't even explain how powerful this information is. And, you know, when you share, so one of the things, I've talked about the cave a lot because I always thought the cave is the womb. But there is a cave in Crete, on the island of Crete in Greece, for Artemis, and it's called the Cave of the White Bear. So inside this cave, it's a massive cave, there is a limestone, so rock that has fallen from the cave itself, that looks like, and it certainly did in the ancient world, look like a bear that's climbing up into like a thing of water. And it used to be used for rituals. And so I find it really fascinating that there's a cave and sort of a bear statue piece, and that ancient women used to come into this cave and practice. We don't know what they practiced. We don't know how they practiced. There's not much written about it. Because, you know, as you know, a lot of women's work is, and women's tradition is orally passed down. So they didn't really write a lot of how they did the rituals, which I guess to some degree is some of our mystery, because we're trying to figure out how do we practice today and honor ancient bear ritual. Where do we start? You know, do you have any thoughts about that? So how does that work?
Because we don't have absolute scientific knowledge about the past. I mean, we have stories and speculation, educated guesswork. I think we are right to combine the facts, select and combine the facts to create a new kind of imaginary that speaks to our souls and our needs better than patriarchy does.
Agreed.
And I have also found that the bear is a constant figure in women's arts and crafts, in women's textiles, handicrafts. And one of the meanings of the bear in these handicrafts has been protection. So women didn't wear aprons only because they didn't want to soil their clothes, but they wore aprons because they had protective shamanic symbols on them.
Yeah.
And the men who studied old societies, indigenous societies, they didn't understand that women's arts and crafts could have shamanic elements. And so that is why they were not burned and destroyed. So it was to our benefit that you know, they thought, oh, these are just women's handicrafts without any value.
Right.
They didn't understand that women's clothing had a lot of shamanic elements in it. And now that's being discovered. And in Finland, with one of my colleagues called Irma Heiskanen, we have been recreating handicrafts with that idea. So I do quilt work and I illustrate my books with quilt work, because then I can give an expression to these goddesses and great mothers, which have never been described or given a voice, given a face. But at the same time, it's being part of the women's spiritual practice, which is not something other than using your hands and using, you know, things like sewing and artistic methods. So the spirituality is not something like, you know, holy days are separate from holidays. In the old system, everything was spiritual. Some things were more spiritual, but everything was spiritual if it had the symbolism of the system in it. And in this picture, I'm wearing a matron apron with the bear because I feel like a bear. And it's empowering to recover these old symbols, which Gimbutas calls the language of the goddess.
Yes.
And, you know, we can't prove everything that, you know, this is how women lived 6,000 years ago. We have a lot of proof, yes, but not absolute proof. But
yes.
I think that it's important that in the academic world, we don't shy away from recreating culture with the knowledge that we gather. So that's why I try to integrate all of this into my life. And even at my wedding, I got married in the woods, and you know, I was not handed over by a father to a husband, but I was accompanied by fairies. And
oh,
so
wow.
We had a sort of a forest theme in the wedding, and pagan rituals, and it was all about a cosmic marriage, protecting our real life marriage.
That's beautiful.
So that's just one example of integrating the information, and also I'm reintroducing the wedding rituals of using the sauna as a preparation for the wedding, the bridal or love raising magic used in the sauna, and trying to get rid of the Polterabend tradition where women are taken to the city center to sell tampons or to look like a whore. So
right.
Instead of those sort of humiliating rituals, I wanted to introduce these beautiful rituals where women are empowered.
Right. Wow.
And in this PowerPoint that you have here, I do have a picture of our wedding as well. And I wanted to show one example of what marrying the bear could mean.
Mm-hmm.
It has a million different interpretations depending on the person who is doing the interpretation.
Right.
But definitely has to do with being connected and protected by the natural world and the natural law of living in balance with the world, rather than, you know, when you think about modern wedding rituals on
right.
television, they have these programs where the four brides are giving points on each other's weddings, you know, and the one who wins, whose wedding is, so to speak, the best, gets to go on a romantic wedding trip somewhere.
Oh.
And so it's all competition and consumerism. And there's practically nothing spiritual about the weddings anymore. It's like, you know, whose wedding is the most expensive and the most pompous, and
right.
And I think it's sad that people are losing, the rituals have become commercialized. So I'm trying to recover the rituals that are truly spiritual and not given, not an expression of the market economy.
Right. Right. I agree 100%. We have definitely lost our way to a lot of the cosmic rituals that we've done, but certainly around marriage and around the sort of property of woman being given, you know, from father to husband, and that whole idea of and then the sort of obsessed virginity and the wearing of the white and the all of these rituals, the wedding showers and all of these rituals. I read something just recently that was talking about how the wedding shower is very much teaching the woman today, because what you receive as a gift is like cooking things or lingerie. So your two jobs, you know, now that you're getting married, are going to be domestication and also, you know, sexuality for your partner. Not really dealing with, well, what about the central figure, which is really the bride? What's in it for her? You know, what is maybe a gift for her, just for her, not for what she represents now to husband and society? And so I think this is a really important aspect that we can bring back in this rituals of.
Well, you think about it in many church ceremonies, the priests or pastors tell the man to kiss his bride, or, you know, she is asked to obey.
Yes.
And although that is being lost, you know, people don't accept that as much anymore. It's been a definite patriarchal ceremony.
Yes. Yes. I love this idea.
And also, And also when you think about giving birth and bringing the child into the world, the sauna was the place where women would stay for 40 days. And that was the quarantine from French quarante, which has now become like an association with something impure or something unhygienic. Uh-huh. And then the whole notion of women having to be churched by the religious office officials because of the polluting impact of giving birth, which is perverse, you know.
Yes.
It's to turn women's natural processes of giving birth and whatever into something polluting is a real insult. But in the Baltic countries, the women are called bears when they give birth.
Oh.
So you know, in the sauna when they are giving birth, they call out, "Oh, here comes the bear."
Oh, wow.
So it's like an honor to become a bear. It's you become divine by giving birth. And I think that's how it should be, because to bring new life on this earth is divine.
Yes.
And, you know, we have to take back the important spiritual symbols linked with femininity. And that's why I find it's a sad thing that now you're not supposed to talk about men and women anymore. You know, there's a tendency to get rid of gender and talk about like genderless genders. And it's like, you know, right now when we women are starting to tap into our rich history and our rich spiritual traditions, now the same women who should be celebrating with us are telling us not to talk about menstruation or menstruation hearts or women's processes, because they have internalized this demonized notion of women.
Yes.
I think that's really sad, but a lot of the young women will not go there. They don't want to know about the spiritual feminine or anything like that.
Yeah, I think that there was a purposeful move, certainly in academia, and I faced this when I was getting my PhD, to move away from goddess culture, like they used to say, or mother cultures, or anything to do with the womb. And the reasoning was like, oh, well, women are not just wombs. And so there was this kind of almost like a diminishing of, it was more like an organic production ability, you know, like, so we are not just wombs. But I think in doing that, we are losing a lot of the spirituality, the magic, the divine aspect of what it means to be, you know, in a biological female body. And so I think that was they were trying to say, well, we don't want to diminish women to just wombs, but in a way you sort of take away that. And so it takes away the very power of women. Of course, we have other powers. Of course, we can do lots of things and we're magical beings in many ways. But yeah, I think so. It was almost like a bit of a war on wombs, you know, a little bit like.
Yeah. And you know, I think that the women who refuse to be women in that way have internalized the patriarchal notion of the feminine, and they don't seem to realize that in the kinds of cultural systems like old Europe and sort of matristic societies that Kim Butas talks about, women are not just wombs or childbearing machines. On the contrary, they were shamans, they were healers, they were political leaders. There's, you know, it's not a patriarchal system that we're talking about at all.
Yes.
And matriarchies are not the mirror image of patriarchy. They understand difference differently. They're not hierarchical binaries where one gender or one being is higher than the other, but they are cosmically connected, interdependent beings in a system of balances. And there's no good and evil. There's constructive and destructive forces that that you have to deal with. But you know, I don't know why the gender studies does not understand that this is not essentialism, because, for instance, in the Minangkabau community in Sumatra in Indonesia, the men are very proud to be called Minangkabau, which means motherlike, because it's the highest value to be caring and to be connected with others. And so motherhood is not in any way linked with submissiveness or right. dependency.
That's right. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I hope that that's something that's coming back to light. This idea, exactly, that it's, and I was just having a discussion with somebody yesterday about her as a woman. She was saying, you know, I've always associated more with masculinity. But I think when we were having this conversation, one of the things that kept coming up is like, she was like, well, I like to climb trees, or when I was a kid, I like to run and I like to do this. And I like, and I thought to myself, well, the way you're categorizing masculinity is really a patriarchal description of what's been categorized as so women can also climb trees and can also, you know, do whatever. So I think in the minds of a lot of people, because of these two categories, masculine and feminine, there are some women that sort of don't want to be associated with them. They see it as soft. They see it as weak. They see it as, you know, or breeding or organically breeding, you know? And so when we had this discussion, that was the thing that I was saying to her, well, you could be all of these things and still just say, you know, as a woman, I'm 100 complete human being. And as a man, or as anyone who, you know, any human can have all these characteristics, and it doesn't make them less of a woman or more of a man. But yeah, I think those are the patriarchal reinforcements. And yeah, and self.
And in fact, a friend of mine just told me that a study has come out that grandmothers were active hunters.
Yes.
And that the DNA, which has been a new method for researching the past, and radiocarbon methods and those kinds of things that have not always been used, are forcing us to rethink, to revisit history.
Yeah.
And women were hunters, and they were horseback riding, warriors as well, yeah, among the Amazons in Sarmatia. And so the idea of the goddess or the great mother being the opposite of the masculine role has now been disproven. And Kim Butes, as you know, was not believed for the longest time, and yes, she was denigrated. But now even his worst enemy, Colin Renfrew, has come to admit that she was right. And
really,
in many countries, people don't know that yet. But
no,
you know, her findings were just right on, spot on.
Yes.
And now we have to revise history and old Europe. When you think about what's happening in Ukraine, I mean, the area of Moldavia, Romania, Ukraine, it was a site of 3,000 years of peace 6,000 years ago.
Wow.
3,000 years of peace. And they have proven it by studying the graves, where they couldn't find any sign of violence in the skeletons.
Wow.
And hardly any weapons. I mean, obviously you need weapons to hunt for food, but even the idea of killing animals is relatively recent, because Barbara Mann in our book shows that during the warm period, I forget the name, Alarod warming period of human history, mm-hmm, animals and humans were companions, And it was as bad to kill an animal as it is to kill a human. But then during the Ice Age, everything changed because people had trouble surviving. And so the killing of the animals and the raping of the women began due to the very, very harsh cold climate and conditions.
Yeah.
But of course, Gimbutas also says that the Bronze Age is when patriarchal hordes from the East came to destroy, you know, old Europe. So I think there have been different developments and different timelines for these changes. But definitely there was a very long matristic or matriarchal period in old Europe. And that's very important information. It's very empowering for anyone to know that it was possible to live in a society that valued arts and crafts and creativity and all of those things without any need for conflict and wars.
Yes, yes. And you know,
when they say you imagine some sort of a golden age.
Yeah.
But why wouldn't it be possible to have a golden age? Like, it's also censoring our hopes and dreams to say that it has always been you know, life is a beach and then you die.
But yes.
Feminists say life is a beach and then you fly.
one. It's so true, you know. Sometimes when I think about Minoans, there's a lot of talk about how Minoans were actually not a combative culture. And there seems to be a lot of evidence. In fact, just a couple of days ago, I saw a debate where somebody posts the double-edged axe, you know, one person was saying, oh, here is a weapon. And another person was saying, actually, we have no evidence that this was used as a weapon. This was a ritual, a ritual object. And I find that people have such a hard time saying, how is it possible that the Minoans, who were this great civilization, didn't have war or didn't have battles or perhaps didn't even have kingships, you know? Like, there's this pushback, you know, there's this assumption that in order to be a successful society, you have to somehow conquer or, you know, have classes or whatever, you know, have this very patriarchal hierarchy. Yeah, there's a bit of a pushback on that for sure.
And when you think how short the period of patriarchy is,
maybe
5,000 years.
Yes.
And, you know, the billions of years that the planet has been in existence, the peaceful kind of era seems to have been much longer.
Yes.
But it's part of the patriarchal myth making to convince people that it's always been brutal. And I think a lot of books have come out recently. This Rutgers wrote a book about an alternative human history where he exposes the myth of the evil human and shows that there have been studies made of human cruelty that were manipulated to give the image that humans are really sadistic and whatever. And then when they had redone these experiments, they found that in fact it was just the opposite. But some scholars had wanted to project the notion and to prove that humans are evil. So it's like the neoliberal economics always also says that it's best for society to be competitive and self-interested, because then the economy thrives. And it's a myth, you know, that the gift economy shows you just the opposite, that instead of accumulating interest for the few, the gift is a kind of spirit that travels across humanity, and its value increases when people give each other what they need.
Yes.
So it's an alternative notion of interest.
Yes.
And I think it's the Maori who have this, I'm not sure who has this notion of how, which is the spirit of the gift. And it's clearly the matriarchal notion of interest, which is shared by the collectivity and not the interest that accumulates to the 1% in the world that is now running the show.
Yes, exactly.
We got really far from the bear religion here, but it's all connected. And
yes. Yes, it really is. I wanted to share with you because I had this dream about bears, and I never thought about. So when I had the dream, I thought for sure it's Artemis speaking to me. And then when I listened to your first talk on the gift economy salon, I thought, oh my God, maybe it isn't. Like maybe there's something else going on. I'd never really dreamt about bears before. But I had this really powerful dream that I was in the house and that a bunch of, you know, brown bears were coming into the house. So nothing fear. Like, so they were not coming to like hurt me or something like that. But as they were coming into the house, I would back up into another room and they would come in and open this door and I would back up into another room. So they were kind of like chasing me in, like they almost like they were like, Carla, Carla, like Carla. And I was sort of constantly moving away from them. And then I woke up, but it was so intense. I don't normally remember my dreams, actually. I'm not a big dreamer in that way, but it was so intense. And so I thought, maybe this is Artemis saying to me, like, let's go. You got to get my stuff out there, you know, because I always associated with the bears. But now that you're talking about, and I've learned so much from you about the bear cult and the bear lore, who knows? I mean, who knows the implications of such a dream? I don't know.
Well, it was like a call.
Yeah.
Calling you to action, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, you are the only one who can interpret your dream because often it picks up on elements in your life,
yeah,
the whole context in which you see this dream.
Yeah.
But it certainly sounds like they were inspiring you and they were coaching you and provoking you to do something with the knowledge that you have. That's how I hear it. But
yeah.
The wonderful thing about the bear stories is that they have multiple meanings. They're so overdetermined that you can go back to them and always find something new. And I think that the key to good literature, just like good stories, is that they are so open-ended and symbolic that they provide a wealth of meanings, and that is a gift in itself. Yeah. And I remember Jung saying of good literature that the best criticism of a work of art is another work of art.
Huh.
Not that you only analyze it, but that it brings something out of you as a midwife. So the good work of art or story touches your inner child and it brings something new from you. So you are participating in the whole creative project. And it's so different from this obsession with analyzing and classifying.
Yes.
What Mary Daly calls methodolatry. You know, this obsession with putting things into boxes and,
yeah,
you know, good stories are not boxes. They are gifts.
Yes.
And they have a life of their own.
Yes.
And you know, when you think, why do the Northern people say you must never call the bear by its name? You have to use euphemisms like the honey eater, the golden apple, something like that.
Oh.
You know, it's practically all cultures have this this notion of you having to find another word for the one that's very powerful.
Wow.
And wow. That's, you know, it's like you, it's so similar to the Christian belief where you shouldn't call God's name for nothing.
Right.
Actually, that's another thing that I talk about in the books is how similar Christianity and the bear religion are in terms of structures, but the content is different. So where in the bear religion, the bear skull is is placed back on the branches of Mother Tree, the tree of life from which the bear is reborn.
Oh.
You have in Christianity the cross where Jesus Christ is hung for resurrection.
Wow.
But in a context of death and cruelty, and yeah. not this beautiful notion of rebirth. And then you have, in my books, I go more deeply into it. You know, the right. Eucharist is the same. You have the bear meal where you eat the bear's body, and women tend to be excluded. And that's just the way it is in Eucharist.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the matriarchal equivalent of the Eucharist, everybody is included, and it's a big feast. And, there's no separation between Eros and spirit, which becomes part of the patriarchal religion.
Right.
And then in the matriarchal system, mothers and daughters are very important. They are in the center. And in Christianity, they are totally left out. You know, the
yes.
focus is on father-son relationships.
Yes.
And the notion of time in Christianity, it's this linear notion, teleological binaries, you know, heaven is more important than the earth, whereas in the matristic or matriarchal system, the earth is the core, is very important, but you don't deny the importance of the sky world. The sky world was kind of a place where the star system allowed you to know when it was the proper time to hunt or do different things. So both were important.
Right.
So in the patriarchal religion, there's radical separation of so many, many things. Spirit, earth, matter, mind, you know, all of these things, the body, they get separated. And that's why there's a lot of need for healing in patriarchy, because of this false shattering of these, or false setting up of boundaries.
Right. Right. I'm very excited about this book that's coming out. I think it's going to be, foundational in goddess circles, but even in history itself, because I think a collection of bear lore and these connections that both you and Barbara Mann make, I think are, yeah, foundational connections. And like you say, perhaps young scholars at some point, hopefully soon, can take that inspiration and then continue to create with it and continue to, I don't know, research and find. And who knows, maybe in a couple of generations, we may return to bear culture, you know, more full on.
We still have bears.
Yeah. Oh, yes. That is very important. Yes. You're absolutely right. Yes. Yes. Hopefully.
I have to, one thing I have to still explain is I speak freely now. And I also speak beyond the pages of the book.
Yeah.
You know, the book, obviously, Oxford University, Oxford, the publisher had his say, and a lot of the things that I've talked about now are not in the book, but they will be in the book on the sauna and on the sweat lodge. So, you know, I couldn't fit it all into this Oxford
yes.
book.
But, yeah.
But then I have also written articles where I was able to focus more on aspects of what I'm talking about that could not fit into the book.
Oh, are those articles online? Like, are they, or in other books, you mean? So we could share the links to them if you send them to me. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. The bear being notion about the sauna. I wrote that about 20 years ago, and I think it's in Academia Edu, you know, uh-huh. or ResearchGate.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if you request from me these articles, I can send them. They're not all out there, because you know, I started writing when it wasn't the internet-based world, so we did not have everything in electronic form.
Right.
And some of my early writings on healing trauma in the sauna, which is also relevant to the spare religion as a kind of healing imaginary, they are not electronically available, and I don't find my diskettes anymore from those days, so I'd have to scan them all. It's a complicated thing now.
Yeah,
so people sometimes forget that we haven't been in this electronic system always.
Yes.
And when they request these articles from me, I don't know what to do, because I have like maybe two copies of the journal left in bad shape, and I can't distribute them as easily as
yes.
things that I have written more recently. But Inanna Press has some of my articles also.
Wow.
In York University. Are you not connected with you?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Yeah,
that's
so,
IT. Yes.
Yeah, so Luciana, you know, she edited many of my articles on the gift economy and on the bear. In
Okay.
Canadian Women's Studies, I have had several articles on it.
Okay, that's wonderful. Yeah, I will probably email you for some of that, because I've sort of fallen down this bear rabbit hole recently, and so I'm just like consuming as much as I can about it. And like we talked about earlier, I would love to go back to my homeland in Romania and look up some of the. I would like to find some of the pre-Roman traditions, you know, because when the Romans came in, we were sort of the Dacians and all the other sort of pre-Roman groups, tribes, etc., were sort of smashed under that. But I would like to go back that far back and further and see some of the original, you know, the ancestral practices of those
well, it
tribes.
Seems to me there's so much to research, and you should definitely get in touch with Macmillan Keynes, you know, because I think she's a theologian, but she's definitely into the feminist spirituality, and she probably has all the connections now and
Yeah.
could guide you in it. And you speak Romanian?
I do. I speak it, I read it, I write it. I write it slower than I used to, but yeah, I
well,
do.
That would be amazing, because then you could really bring a contribution by being able to translate the Romanian writings about the bear.
Yes. Yes.
It's very important information, and you know, it's inaccessible to those of us who don't speak those languages. I mean, I can read Russian and French and many other languages, and it's a real big help for doing this research. But then
yes.
A lot of the Eastern European countries are beyond my purview because of the language problem.
Yeah, that's very exciting. That's very exciting. So,
and Romania, of all places, is so important because of it seems to have the most traces of the bear religion.
Unbelievable. Maybe it's a call home. Maybe my dream was a call home. Like,
yeah, Carla, do something about this.
Yeah, because I've been so resistant to go back. I've gone back once with my mother, but I've been so resistant to go back. I think there's a lot of trauma, like sort of, you know, in my house, in my family, there's a lot of like fear, or because we escaped, because we left before the come, because we had to hide and blah, blah, blah. And for a long time, there was this fear of like being found out. And of course, we couldn't go back. And even after the communists fell, nobody wanted to go back, because you're still afraid they might catch you as the refugee, you know? So I did go back one time with my mother. That was about maybe 5, 6 years ago. And that was nice. But I think, but you know, we were doing more like seeing family and things like that. But I think maybe it's time to go. I've been feeling the call to go back and do, like I said, pre-Roman history. Perhaps this is a sign, I don't know, but yeah.
So you know, to conclude, I think the key word about the bear religion is healing.
Yes.
And regeneration, and that's what the world really needs now, because there's so much extreme right bullshit,
yes.
hatred, discrimination, racism, sexism, pornography, you know, all the bad things, the climate change, the refusal to take the climate change seriously. So I think that the bear has a message for us.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, okay. Thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for today. After I press stop, please don't go. so we can talk maybe for a little bit longer. But thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your knowledge. And I'm very excited. So I'm going to try and time this podcast at the same time that your book is coming out so that we can, you know, create this connection where people could just click and purchase, you know, and, so I'd be very excited for that.
Thank you very much for that.
All right. Thank you guys. And I will see you all next time.